Andy is having some audio problems and he's going to fix it. But me and Sarah are here to pick up his slack. And welcome everybody into hopefully everybody's best year of their life, 2024. I can definitely say that my 2023 was a tough one. I don't know what you'd say about 2023, Sarah.
I am starting 2024 off with a lot of illness. So
yeah, we hear so it in your voice.
Not good.
Andy, are
Sarah,
you with
do you
us?
Have the vid?
No, I don't have COVID. I have something much worse. I wish it was COVID.
What's worse than that?
I don't know. Whatever I have, it's like can't be
three
treated.
Children.
The new COVID. All my kids are healthy, which is like even worse because they're all full of energy.
But it was awful.
Actually, I blame Kevin because it was upon seeing Kevin. So we have to tell the audience. So we were both in Tahoe and we didn't know it.
No.
And I was dropping my kids off at ski school. So I was in the line to drop them off. I look behind me and I see this guy that I recognized from the internet. I'm doing podcasts on the internet. But I haven't seen Kevin like in real life in, you know, a decade. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
So,
7 years. I think it's 7 years.
Yeah. So I was like, Kevin? Yeah. and you know, he's all in ski gear and stuff, but I still spotted him. It's very exciting. And we got to ski/he snowboards together.
Yeah.
But that killed me. After that day, I died. So that was my last hurrah before getting really sick.
Yeah.
Where were you guys
skiing? It was fun. At Heavenly.
Heavenly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
South Lake Tahoe.
Yeah.
I'm jealous. It was warm on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's very warm in Tahoe. Like they have to make all the snow.
The snow is not good.
Storms.
Sarah's husband, it took me down some runs. He's a skier and snowboards don't do well in icy environments. So I was not having the best day that I've had. But anyways, no, that was really fun to meet up with you in person so randomly. It was like I was like coming up to the line near the very end of the line. It was very, very funny. But anyways, let's get to what the people want to know,
right?
Which is why we do this podcast. And I posed a question in the group chat, which I'm still going to ask, to be honest. Andy thought it was lame, but I'm still going to go around the horn and I'll just answer it myself if you guys won't. But like, what was your biggest like personal learning out of 2023? I'll go first.
No, go for it.
So my personal learnings was that you really need to like stick to something and have like an actual opinion versus being a follower. So this kind of goes through like my business. So sticking through that and making it like hopefully out of the other side, which was definitely not easy. But even looking at like some of the financial markets. So I just looked up the S&P price was like, if you actually like didn't believe that there was going to be a recession or all these things, and there's a number of reasons the markets go up, but like the S&P, you could have made, if you invested at the beginning of the year, 26%. Also, if anybody knows the ETF QQQ, which got just hammered in 2022, they were up 50%. And so that's kind of where mine's like, you need to have like your own opinion on things and just stop fucking following everybody else. And just stick to like what you believe is true, have a unique like perspective on something. And also if anybody listens here, knowing like, don't fucking follow the hype cycles. Don't get into AI. Don't do whatever it, crypto is, don't do
Abacus
whatever
is coming back in 2024 per Kevin.
Don't do what everybody else is doing. Have your own point of view on all of these different things. And you could not only like, there's a reason people aren't doing something. Maybe it's hard. Maybe you have some insight, but like, do something yourself and don't follow the crowd. That was my biggest like learning from this last year.
Just
what
to
do
be
you guys
clear,
got?
Kevin thought, just to be clear with everyone, Kevin thought e-commerce wasn't going to be a thing in 1995.
That's not true. Anyways, that is absolutely not true at all.
He also was wondering what the internet was.
I was also 11 years old, and I think I got my first computer, and I guess 1995, I didn't know what the internet was, but in like 1996, 97, I definitely did.
I was like hardcore using the internet in 95. I was on AOL, just killing it in those chat rooms, meeting all kinds of strange older men, and you know,
That was for me in 96. I got my first computer at when we were 12. I was 12.
Did they have AOL in Canada, Kevin? I thought the American stood for the A.
They did, and I got the CDs to my house as well. So yeah, of course they did. Come on, give me some of your reflections in the last year, like real stuff.
My biggest thing, you know, we were just reviewing our, you know, 2023, what we hit in 2023. And like we had burned a lot, like millions of dollars in 2022.
Yeah.
You know, just lit it on fire. And in 2023, we ended up profitable. And a lot of that was because we grew revenue, which was good. But another big chunk of that was because we drastically cut our expenses, like more than in half. So we have a smaller team, just less, you know, less perks, less things that we just didn't need. Like none of that shit we needed. And like, I actually was searching in my email, like back to something in 2020 where we were like, should we get rid of the fresh fruit delivery that we're getting weekly? Because people are going to stop coming into the office because of COVID. I was like, holy shit, we were getting fresh fruit delivered to the office every week. Like just all this shit. And, you know, obviously we cut back on a lot of that before this past year, but this past year was just down back to basics. And you know, it's been amazing how much we can actually accomplish with a smaller team, with less stuff going on, less expenses.
Right.
We, you know, actually are doing more, I think, getting more done.
Yeah.
2023
awesome.
Was the year of recession for Silicon Valley catering companies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we had already gone fully remote, so there was no more fresh fruit being delivered. But like, I can't believe when we had an office, we actually thought that was like a core thing that we needed to supply.
Oh, yeah. If you can remember back to what was it? Your Postmates days, Sarah, and also when I was having Ship. Yeah, I remember all of the meals and all of the different perks that you had in the office and all that, and like all that's gone away. Now people have remote work, which they probably actually value even more than all that other stuff.
I can have all the fresh fruit I want, but I'm paying for it personally.
You're paying for it. Yeah.
In my refrigerator.
And, Andy, what's your takeaway from the last year?
I guess my takeaway is I can pretty much do anything. 2023 for me, like everyone else on this call, was a tough year. And I feel like it was a walking on glass type of year. And it ended up in a place that I'm very proud of and I'm very happy about. And I just think that you can pretty much accomplish anything if you put your mind to it. And the odds are forever skewered in your favor to the upside. So I think that's my big lesson. I know that's not something very specific, but it's just something very personal that I feel I learned in 23.
Yeah, and also I echo that for especially for you. I know some of the backstory that we definitely won't get into, but yeah, walking on glass. I think that you're kind of my go-to call when I have a walking on glass moment that I'm like, how do I get out of this? Yeah, I've been really impressed by the way that you're able to get out of certain situations or just kind of navigate like really tough positions. But we won't get it on get into any of that in this call or in this podcast. Maybe another time we'll get into more of it. But on the next thing I wanted to get into, which I thought it was really interesting, it's something that our other host Siki shared, that Sahil, the founder of Gumroad, he shared on LinkedIn that I thought that it was kind of crazy. So he basically posted this how to apply for a product designer job at Gumroad, and it's basically like spend 1 hour watching because he does public board meetings on YouTube, spend 3 hours designing something relevant to the company in Figma. And then an email or DM with the image embedded in line and some explanation to the design is the decisions that you made. And he said that basically that would put you in the top 1% of applicants if you just did those things. And the comments are so heated that it is astounding. I don't know if you guys got a chance to read this, but like some of the comments are basically like, why should I spend 4 hours to apply to a position? Other ones like I'm presuming you don't want to hire parents that don't have the 3 hours that dedicate to this task, and it just kind of goes on and on. And like I personally hated all of these comments. Like if you want to work with a top tier, like anything, if you want to do something amazing in your life, like you gotta like, is 4 hours too long to spend to actually do that? Like we all can carve out, obviously, like I'm a parent, Sarah's a parent, like I really hate that parent like comment of just like, oh, you don't want parents to. It's like, no, you gotta show up. You have to, like, you want to get the best jobs in the world, you gotta put the work in. Like I really, and it was just, I don't want to, and I actually pulled up the years of like the different generations, but I'm barely in, well, I'm a millennial. I don't know if this is like the Gen Z type of people, that this kind of want everything to be easy. I don't know what that is. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts?
Like it's very related to like DEI gone wrong, where like now you have to like it like you can't teach math in school because some people aren't good at math, and that's not fair.
Yeah, that's
You
so
can't expect
crazy.
excellence in a job interview because some people don't have the extra bandwidth to put into the interview. Like, no, I'm sorry. Like, you can expect the best, and just because you want to look at a diverse applicant pool, for example, doesn't mean that you shouldn't expect the
Yeah.
highest level of performance. And this is like the DEI shit that gives DEI a bad name and reputation when you're like, we have to dumb it down to the lowest common denominator. You know, we have to worry about parents and how much time they have, and therefore, we can't expect this. And we have to worry about people who don't have arms. And, you know, what if they can't submit a file in Figma? So we shouldn't expect, like, no, you should expect what you expect. You should expect what you need to have really good performance at the job. And then people who can't cut it can't cut it. And I feel like this is what. Why there's so much pushback now against like DEI, because it's come to this where like you just can't expect the best anymore because that's seen as discriminating.
Can you explain what DEI is for everybody that may not know that acronym?
So it stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion, which are all, you know, incredible things that I absolutely believe in and support. Those are
Same.
words that it would be hard for anyone to argue against that they aren't for. But the combination of those words as this acronym DEI has become kind of weaponized and used now to mean that, you know, first of all, we have to dumb everything down. We can't teach kids math, for example, because some kids aren't good at math. Like, stuff like that has come under the focus of DEI. It's the stuff that has led to these university presidents saying that, you know, it's okay to be anti-Semitic because
right.
you know, Jews are not a class we should protect. It's kind of become all of these horrible things. And it started out as a concept we would all agree with and believe in, or any reasonable person would, and kind of become, you know, just everything that's wrong with society, in my opinion.
I'm going to go a little bit back. What I think caught me the most about this product designer interview, I've worked at some incredible designers. I don't know any top-tier company that doesn't make a designer do a 1 to 2 week case study on their own, non-paid, to interview. So that's Facebook, Airbnb. I would assume Apple does it. This is par for the course for a design interview. So he's asking you to send him to spend 3 to 4 hours. It's like, it's de minimis compared to what you're going to have to do.
Remotely, by the way. It's all remotely.
To what you're going to have to do to interview at Meta or Airbnb, at least in their heyday.
Product manager interviews back when I was a product manager. Like, you would always have some kind of take-home problem that, you know, was also really important as the interviewer because you want to know what you're getting into. You want to know if your ideas and the way you, you know, think about things would actually be a good fit for that company. So I think this is standard. Now, a lot of startups may not be able to expect the same things from candidates as, you know, Google or Meta. But I think if he wants to expect that and, you know, have that kind of requirement to work at Gumroad, like, that's very on par with what a lot of these big tech companies do.
Well, have you ever hired a designer or a PM without doing a case study?
We have. But I think that's because, like, as a startup, and especially when we were in this talent war, like, you had to cut corners. You had to, you know, be willing to accept less.
And you had to offer
kind of
fresh fruit.
To fight for candidates. I mean, we would just, like, beg people to work for us back in the day. But, like, now I think the landscape is changing. I think now the job market is more competitive and companies can demand more.
Yeah. In the last 7 years, I have not hired anybody in product and design without a case study or a design or portfolio review plus a design project.
Yeah. They should all have a portfolio already. Like, that's part of the application process for product. You know, we would do, like, the case study or the exercise in the actual interview.
Yep.
I think, you know, if we were, and maybe in this job market, like, you could actually get someone to do a take-home exercise, but that was harder to do when everyone had, like, a million job offers.
I was doing it in 2021. We cut the case, we shortened the case, but we were still doing it, so I believe in it. And every now and then you have somebody who says, I'm not interested. And we say, thank you. It's cool. Yeah. Goodbye.
Yeah, I think more or less, like, it also, like, the comments that I read there, like, those are the most like comments on the entire thread. And I just kind of thought, as a general theme, it's just like, are people not willing to put in, like, the work to get a job? Like, I remember back, like, when I graduated and I had my CS degree, like, I would literally go, like, and do whatever anybody, like, being from Canada, like, kind of puts me at a disadvantage to get a job at Google or Facebook or something like that. But just because Canadians are slower and they think that. But it's a joke. But, like, I would literally do anything. Like I would create a program. I'd walk through. Like, I would spend, like, 8 or 10 hours easy for just the chance to work with somebody. And I don't know if it's, like, if it's this next generation that's coming up, like I immigrated my entire family to the U.S. to have, not that Canada is like, Canada's a fine country to live in. But like I will do anything to be successful. And
well, I think that's the thing, like most people aren't top 1%, and like that's okay. Not everyone has to be.
Which he names in there. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And like,
right. Yeah.
Like the, there's this woman, Lucy Gao, who I follow on X. She is a very interesting figure. She we should actually get her on the pod. She had a company before, made a lot of money, now has a new startup, and she's pretty hardcore. And she tweeted or whatever, X'd about, you know, she can't believe people aren't checking their email or working from Christmas to New Year's. And got a lot of, you know, heat for it. And people were like, of course you don't work that hard. And, you know, only if it's your company would you work that hard. And that's the thing, like, not everyone is going to be a founder. Not everyone is going to be in the top percent of their field. And not everyone, you know, wants that. And that's
which
okay.
is fine, which is that's fine. Really fine.
I think, like, if you do want that, though, you have to realize, like, you have to put in the work. You have to, you know, work between Christmas and New Year's. I'm sorry, but like,
you
can't completely sign off. I was on my deathbed, like barely functioning, and like someone reported a bug, and you know, I had to get online and figure it out and fix shit. Like, there's no, the buck stops with me as a founder. And so I think, you know, it's okay that people don't want that. They may just not be a fit to work at Gumroad or these companies that expect that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's anyways, but I think your point is totally spot on. It's just like there is a certain, and maybe that is the 1%. I would love it to be like the 20% of people that actually would, like, because I look back at like my wife and like when she was having our first kid and she was working at a tech company, and she would just be like working her fucking ass off, and like she's not a founder, and like she was more or less like a middle manager. She managed hundreds of like contractors, and she had a really tough job, but like she would be online all the time, like, and also taking care of our son and all of this. Like I hope that we're not like going back to the days that everybody kind of, I don't know, like signs off at 5 and like everybody expect, well, I don't know. There's the reason I bring up like the gen, like the gen millennials, and I'm looking at the definitions now, Gen Zs, and now we have the Gen Alphas. I just really don't want us to get into like the place that everybody thinks that they're just, they are owed something. And like, you need to really work on, like, work hard for whatever you're going to be doing and be proud of it.
Wasn't that opportunity? I mean, if basically everyone else in the market reverts to the mean and you're the outlier, you can work harder, you can ship more, you can do better. I view that as honestly like a positive thing for all the entrepreneurs out there who want to walk on glass. I mean,
true.
I did over Christmas. No, I read Elon Musk's book, and there's a reason he went.
Me too. Yeah,
he's hardcore, quote unquote. I don't know that I'd run my company the way he does, but he seems a very fascinating individual who will do whatever it takes to get it across the line, and most people won't.
No, and that's also why there's a lot of people that they want to take the safe route, and that's great. We need, obviously, not everybody could be the one percenters. That's why they're the one percenters. But it was just really funny to read all the comments, and like everybody's like, you can't have parents deal this. I'm like, some of the best employees I've ever, or people I've worked with, have been parents. Like, fuck that shit. Like, that is completely bullshit. They're some of the best people that are able to juggle so many different things, because literally that's what you do at home.
Yeah, I hate that. as a parent, I don't like the stereotype, because that, you know, just ends up negatively impacting parents, especially mothers, when they're stereotyped as not being able to do all the things that a different employee could do. And then people don't want to hire them. And that's, you know, that's what I'm trying to fight against.
Yeah. So what else is going on in your guys' mind? What else are you thinking about, or can be good things, that our listeners, can take from us?
2024 predictions. I mean, look, no one hears that. We should.
Let's go. What do you got?
Ooh, that's a good one. AI is actually real. It's not hype, unlike what Kevin thinks.
It is
massive labor advantages.
To be clear, hold on, hold on. I want to take, like, do not label me. I think AI is real. I use it today in our company. I have it in my pitch deck, but I do think it's in a hype cycle right now.
Yeah,
that most technology like trends go through.
I don't discount that. I think we're in inning one or two, and this is probably as big as the internet, but maybe I'm wrong. I think I'm going to ship a very interesting product this year. I can't wait to show everyone. I think this group's going to have some very interesting announcements. I think inflation probably cools. I think venture crawls back, because it was typically private markets lag public markets 6 to 12 to 18 months. I think you see a lot of smaller venture firms continue to leave the market, if not go out of business altogether, just like we saw in 08 and 09. I think, unfortunately for the venture industry, the bad news is kind of just starting. The companies that got bridged in mid last year now have to go out and raise with very overflated valuations. And so while the stock market roared 25-ish%, the venture industry kicked the can for a large part. And so I think we have another year of kind of overhang, but I think investing starts to normalize to some degree. And look, I don't know what trend is going to be next. I don't think any of us saw 2022 was going to be a war that led to inflation. And I don't think anyone then saw AI come at the beginning of 23. So those are my interesting predictions. I don't know if they're very counter consensus or not, but that's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, Kevin? Those are definitely consensus views. I don't think anybody is going to argue it with you. I think 2024 is going to be the year of logistics tech. I'm going to take the counter.
Buses are going to fly, everyone. 2024,
and that's going to be led by Eros.
Eros.com.
Yeah, Eros.io. To be clear.
Oh shoot! Sorry.
funny story. There's this. I tried to acquire the .com from some person early on. Everybody has a funny story trying to acquire the .com. And this is somebody, he's like, I'm never going to sell it to you. I don't care the amount of money that you would give me. Like, I don't care. I'm like, why do you care so much? I'm like, he's running this AC business. And he's like, he just won't give it up. It's so funny. Anyways, the predictions that I have for this year, I'll be a little more bullish. I think that the venture industry is going to really take off, and I think late Q1, and there are going to be a lot of companies that are going to get funded. I do agree with you, Andy. I think that there's a lot of dead companies that hopefully will give money back to their investors, they'll kind of just die, because 2021 was, I talk to people who they have $50 to $100 million in their balance sheet, and they're growing it they're not even growing the company at all. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, give the money back and restart something.
Pay a dividend.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I think that you should give the money back. It doesn't make sense. They're now investing their money and running their company profitable off of that. It makes no sense at all to me. I think that also any like founders that this is, and I don't know, Andy, maybe you do this because your financial background, but any founders that have like an investment strategy to like the capital that they get from like actual VCs, that's always a red flag in my mind. I'm like, why don't you just like focus on running your business? But I think that 2024 is going to be the year that we get back to like actually running good businesses. I do think that it's going to be different. I think that the year of 2023, that everybody was trying to get profitable and like kind of hunker down, I think 2024 is going to be returned to the norm of venture growth. I think that there's going to be a start on the war of talent, because there's going to be a lot more of new investment into new companies. I think that it is going to return to the norm. And I think that there still are going to be companies that are focused on profitability, which is totally fine. Everybody has their own choice. And maybe they go through another path. I think that venture companies are going to raise larger rounds. I think also at the tail end, I'm going to predict Q3 is going to be the opening of the IPO window. I think there's actually quite a few massive IPOs. I think that you should be looking. Stripe is probably going to be like one of the biggest ones that we see. And then from there, it's really, maybe they go out even earlier than that. I don't know. There has been some earlier IPOs that happened like late 2022 that did okay. We had Instacart and we had Klaviyo. They did okay. And I think that like somebody like a Stripe can really change a lot of those things, which is going to mean more liquidity for investors, also for employees to invest in earlier stage companies, which like continues this entire cycle. So I'm actually extremely positive on 2024 from a venture landscape. And I think that we're going to, with the reduction, reduced inflation, the Fed is signaling at least three rate reductions. I think that we are, even though that Andy is right, like the private markets definitely do trail behind the public markets, but I think that there's going to be enough smart investors out there, or maybe just a little bit too eager investors out there, that are going to plow a lot more money into the venture landscape. But I do think, and the one thing that did happen over this last year, is there have been so many blocked acquisitions. So you think of Figma, there's a number of other ones. So I think that the growth dollars are going to go to the bigger winners, versus before they would go to like maybe a smaller winner that maybe will be acquired. I think there's going to be a more concentration of growth capital to the big winners that are going to go and be public. And also, I think I shared this with you guys. It was very funny, not funny, but interesting. So Figma, they announced their deal to Adobe for $20 billion. And I think this was real, but their actual ARR number now is like, was it an $11 billion?
Well, it was because they counted their breakup fee and their ARR. They like annualized it and counted it.
Oh, is that what that was? Because they got a $1 billion.
I'm sure they're still doing very well, but like they got a $1 billion breakup fee, and then they
so if you amortize that over the whole year, okay, like, I missed that joke. Then.
Accounting, which is just
okay. I missed that.
No,
okay.
Like quintessential startup accounting of like really
got it. Yeah,
like, annualize your breakup fee.
Got it. Yeah, that's it. It's like when WeWork had the what did they call like the community EBITDA or something like that?
Community adjusted.
Yeah. So those are my kind of predictions for this next year. Sarah, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I agree with everything except I'm not sure about the logistics tech. But
it has to happen. Come on, Sarah.
So much pent up, like everyone, you know, had like 3 years of COVID, and then they had like this recession or this like threat of a recession. So whether you were a startup founder or even just like or an investor or just a consumer, like all you were hearing was like the recession is coming, like it's, you know, you got to conserve your money, like it's getting really dire out there, like be profitable, you need years of runway. And so, you know, that kind of adrenaline gets you through a year or however long.
Yeah.
But I think we've like run out of adrenaline, and now it's like we're going to spend money. Whether that's consumers spending money on like experiences or things that they've been wanting to do but felt that they couldn't do, whether it's VCs spending money investing in companies, whether it's founders spending money on like investing in their businesses, it's no longer
private planes.
Yeah, it's no longer going to be so constrained, which will mean that I think some companies will fail. They'll go under because they will just run out of capital. And they'll do that kind of faster. And some VC firms will just not be able to raise the next round and you know, go away. But then some will actually be able to grow and invest in their growth. So I think there's like, I think this, like, we have to be so careful on how we spend. I think that's going to go away for many, many companies who were able to maybe do it for a period of time, but not forever. Unless they truly change their DNA, and some have, like I'm hopeful that we will have truly changed and are not going to go back to being unprofitable. But I also think the consumer trend is really interesting because I think people have been, I think there's just a lot of pent up demand and people are going to be spending.
Logistics tech.
Yeah. And whether that's on, you know, experiences or things, I think people just, because of COVID, there was nothing to spend on. And then there was like this idea that you had to be really frugal. And if you were doing kind of these extravagant things, you were doing something wrong and it was something to be embarrassed by. And now I think like, oh my God, now we can finally spend some money and do things that we've been wanting to do. I am seeing like so many parents like in my circle, which is very, you know, clearly very biased because I live in Silicon Valley. So people here have more money, but like parents talking about like international trips they're going to take with their kids and like where they're going to go. And like, this was not a conversation that I think families were having a couple years ago. Even last year when people felt like they had to be more frugal. So I think this is a big thing that's changing. It's just the spending that's going to happen and an opportunity for founders. You know, if you're building something for consumers now, then consumers feel like they have money.
Or if you're powering people buying things like you would.
Or if you're building for startups,
right.
I think startups are feeling like they can actually spend a little bit more on, you know, software, for example.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. So in 2023, I think that who got hurt that the hardest were like just pure like B2B like companies. Like everybody looked to trim what they were spending, and a lot of these like B2B startups that you could maybe argue that should not have existed in the first place, and they were kind of like an unnecessary add-on, but that really shook. And to Andy's initial point, that shook the entire, like there's so many VCs that are still funding these companies. And so I do wonder if those will go back in favor, if the growth rates will increase with more startups or not, or if some of these companies will just go away and we'll just be back to what are the most important things that you need to spend money on, like AI, which I do agree with, Andy.
Again, I guess 2024, the year of logistics tech, everyone. I can't wipe the shit-eating grin off my face as I'm saying this.
No, it's good. This year, I think it's been great for this pod, to be perfectly honest. We've had a lot of great guests, but also I think I've learned a ton. Also, a lot about like how people, and we do have like a niche audience, and also it's hard to actually measure how many listeners we have. Like, we could have tens of thousands. We could have.
We could have millions.
We have no idea. We have so many billions. We have no idea, but we all three of us, I know, get chased down the streets from our fans. I think that we definitely in 2023 have struck a chord. I think that for especially first time founders, and I'd say this even more broadly with like the kind of direct to consumer like education, so that be that through podcasts or through YouTube or whatever, like you can learn so much more, and you could have such a big leg up on the competition. Like, obviously previously it was like books, like you could read, like there obviously are still awesome books. But I think that also what's changed is that you can learn from the people. And also, like, look, like, why do we do this podcast? Maybe we'll go around the circle here and ask people. I do this because I'm trying to build a brand for myself. I won't lie to that. I want people that want to join my company to know who I am. I want investors to hopefully listen to something of this. And the way that I could do that, and also I want to help first-time founders really like skip the steps that and the mistakes that I made, which I think happens everywhere, that you have so much content and all these different things. I don't know. If you guys would, either comment on why you guys like to continue doing this with this crazy person that is in logistics tech, or just even like the education that people have today, that could you imagine like when you started your career, like we just didn't have this like this access to content that. You could maybe skip like a few like years in your career just by learning from other people on these different platforms.
Well, I do this for different reasons. I do this because this crazy guy named Kevin, who does logistics tech, keeps texting me and begging me to do it. Okay. And I generally like Sarah, the other host, and it's fun to talk shit with her. Sarah, why do you do it?
I love our... chat group. I feel like I've gotten a lot of value just from talking through a lot of these ideas with you guys and arguing about things and debating things. I've learned a lot myself. And also it is a way to scale helping people. I just get people all the time that want help, and I either send them my, what's that platform called that we use? I don't even remember, the intro link. Or I'm like, you know what, I put out a lot of free content on LinkedIn and X and the podcast, and so like I probably have like an episode or a post somewhere addressing the thing you want to talk about. So like if you could just write me an email what your question is, and maybe I can link you to something I've already created on the topic, or if not, I can try to answer it via email, but like I just don't have the time or the voice. My voice is like hoarse by the end of every day to talk to all of these people individually. So I just like I have to scale how I'm able to help other people.
I say no to most people now. That's something that I've started to do over the last couple of years.
Except for through intro.
That is true. You can book Sarah.
Maybe, but
You can book Sarah or I on intro, and I will.
For how much per 15 minutes is it?
I don't even know my rate.
Oh, I'm sure you don't.
This is, I mean, like, literally, we should get the CEO of Intro on this show. He's a multi-time founder, and I think we're going to see him right afterwards, because I think he's secretly funding Sarah and my vacations.
We should get him on. And, I mean, I love, like, the concept, even if I don't get booked a lot. I love the idea of, like, valuing your time and, like, realizing, like, there's someone who will pay this amount, then, like, you know, everyone should pay that to talk to me, or like I can try to find a way to help them that is not
right
as expensive for me.
Yeah. So maybe, okay, this is the last question topic because we're running out of time. But what do you guys think that the different content channels are going to be? Let's call it in 2024 and beyond. So we have Twitter. I would say that Sarah is by far the most active person on Twitter. We have LinkedIn, which Andy and Sarah are in a fist fight to get the most followers on there. We also have like YouTube, this is where we publish our stuff. We have Spotify, which we publish our stuff on there. And we have TikTok as well, which if we could ever get enough listeners to get a producer or somebody, we will have TikTok. What do you guys think of like the content that people consume and like going forward, like how people should be using it, or just kind of a general kind of question on like the content in general and going forward in 2024.
So I'm a Luddite and I read. I've told everyone in this in our WhatsApp group that I don't listen to audiobooks. I very rarely listen to podcasts. I will read the transcript of podcasts, but I read.
That is so weird, by the way. That is so weird.
I can't focus on audio.
Do you print it out on like a paper and like...
I'm not even sure I have a printer. I read it on my phone. I read books on my phone.
Okay, anyways. So you think that the future is reading?
The future is written text.
And you're in AI. I'm not going to go down
this
road.
My second guess on this one is going to be the future is be real. That's going to make a comeback in 2024.
Okay.
Oh, I'm an investor in that through one I invested in. So I do want that one to make a comeback. That would be.
I don't even know what that company is.
It's like one selfie a day that goes away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's I saw that I was like invested in it. I was like, oh, damn, it's not doing well.
That's going away. Yeah, definitely. But what do you think, Sarah? You were on Twitter before you it's still a powerhouse for like influential people, and you use it more than any other platform.
I've kind of stopped using it as much. I mean, I think the best platform, this is like what everyone says, but I think it's true, is like the one you're going to post on and be good at and maintain. Like if you want to start a podcast, or you want to start a YouTube channel, or you want to start a TikTok or Twitter, like it's just important that the platform is something that works for the kind of content you create and that you kind of keep at it and keep improving on that platform. And if it's one that doesn't come as naturally, like I tried to do TikTok, I spent a month where I was like, I'm going to do a TikTok every day. And like it just didn't come naturally. I really hate looking at myself. And it's not like I'm not a dancer, so I couldn't do like the cool moves and videos. And like, it was too hard for me. And
did
so, like,
you lip sync?
I did do some of those actually. but like, it didn't come naturally. So it took me a really long time. It wasn't the kind of thing I would just naturally think of ideas for. Whereas Twitter comes really naturally, and like LinkedIn too. So I just feel like you have to choose the platform that works, and then also don't choose a dying platform. Like the platform itself is you know, like Substack is becoming all Nazi content. And that's like the content that performs really well on Substack.
Is it really? Interesting.
Nazi content. So that's now the platform for Nazis. So if you don't want to do Nazi stuff, like maybe don't choose Substack. So it kind of like you got to check that the platform is going to be around and is reasonable. But as long as it kind of meets that basic check, I think it's okay if it's not TikTok, if that doesn't work for you.
Right. Yeah.
Substack is the Nazi platform?
I never knew that.
Yeah,
you got to get Bill Ackman on there.
Yeah, it's gotten real big with Nazis. Someone wrote a whole post as to why the Nazis have taken over and really like it.
Wow.
But it kind of like that long form, like, let me give you all the reasons why Jews are evil. It kind of works really well for that Nazi audience is kind of what the post was explaining. And so and Substack doesn't ban that content. And they, in fact, are really monetizing it and profiting off of it. So if you don't want to support Nazis, don't subscribe to Substack. Don't put your content on Substack.
All right. That is very sad. And we're not going to end the show on that. I definitely would say that like content can be used for not that any of us are like, I want to be known for being a business and I want to promote logistics tech and to use us, obviously. And I think that these different platforms could be used for many different things. And Sarah, you're exactly right. Like, I think if it doesn't come natural, like for either you or your business, you should definitely not use it. But the rate of change that all of these things are taking is like quite remarkable. Like if you even think back, like nobody mentioned Snapchat, for instance, right? Remember Snapchat? Yeah. Like it got taken over by...
Oh, that's the problem. Like,
no, I was in Snapchat and maybe I just, I'm a little cooler than you, Sarah.
Yeah,
I was on Snapchat. I'm definitely not.
Crowd.
No, I'm definitely not. No, but like there's continuously like an evolving like content. So like obviously before we had like everybody had subscriptions to the New York Times and all that. Now that's kind of turned into like more or less Twitter. And then that's how I read most of my news. LinkedIn actually has, I actually put that as like a 2023 like surprise for me, how big and like how big of an audience you would get on LinkedIn. Like read the comments from Sahil, who is way bigger on Twitter, on his LinkedIn post. Like there's an ever changing landscape that, based on what your like individual or like we're our audience or first time founders that you can utilize and you could be big. Like I'm so surprised at people that like I'm like of the like I think that I have some influence on Twitter, but like zero on LinkedIn for whatever reason. I don't fucking know why. And that's where everybody like, I now have a B2B company. Like I should be bigger. I don't know how to be bigger on there. And so like there's, and all that content is all free. Same with Google, obviously, like SEO is a big thing. Like all of these different platforms. And it's always changing. So I'd be interested to see what happens. TikTok now, I know this. I can't say how I know this, but like, TikTok e-commerce is going to be fucking massive, and like potentially take over the Shopify/Amazon type of stuff based on like their volume that they're pushing through. So like there's continuously things that are changing there. And I think like if you're a founder and you want to like ride a wave, like I know so many companies that have rode, like if you think of Zynga, like why was Zynga successful? They rode like the Facebook wave when they had like partners and all those different things. So wanted to maybe end on that note on a on a maybe more positive note than the Nazi stuff and Substack, even though that's very sad. Unless you guys have anything else to add to this episode, do you or not?
2024, the year of logistics. Go to airhouse.io.
Logistics tag.
Wait.
Do it. Right. Sign up for Kevin's service.
And yes, and we will save you money and we will get your stuff on time and help your business grow. So thanks everybody for listening. And here's to, I think in agreement, all three of us, our predictions for 2024, a great year. The market, hopefully the private market's going to follow the public markets. I still think AI is in a hype cycle, but any can disagree with that. Here's to a good 2024 for all of our listeners. And also thank you for listening and like and subscribe to whatever platform that you're listening to. Thank you all for listening.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.